email ray@rte.ie. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, back in 2016, Ross Good decided to leave his job and become a stay-at-home dad. S-A-H-D. Isn't that what they call them?
That's
Ross,
it.
Yes.
That's it. Stay-at-home dad.
Now, according to an article which Ross featured in the Irish Times on Tuesday, recent figures show that just 11,000 fathers took full responsibility of the day-to-day needs of their children and officially are stay-at-home dads. So, Ross, you're very much in the minority in what you're doing.
We really are.
Yeah.
We really are.
Thanks so much for coming in.
No problem. Thanks for inviting me in.
Yeah, and you have your two charges with you.
I have my two monkeys outside. Yeah. How realistic being a stay-at-home dad is that my wife is at home working away, has her calls from at home, and at short notice, it is very difficult to find people to jump in to mind your kids.
Yeah.
So the original plan was to try and do that, but at the last minute, we just said, you know what, I'm just going to have to bring you with me.
Yeah. So it's
reality.
Maya and L.
Mia.
Sorry.
And L.
L. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
As in the letter L. Exactly.
Yes. Yeah. Mia and L. And what ages are they?
Mia has just gone 10. 2 weeks back.
Right.
Which is making me feel pretty old. And L will be 7 in July.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, you came to the stay-at-home dad thing. It was sort of maybe on your mind, but then it was nearly forced upon you. Is that fair enough to say?
That is fair enough, yeah. It was definitely in the end forced upon me, but about a year and a bit before that, in my previous life, I'd been a financial advisor and was doing pretty okay, but then, as we all know, the backside of the world fell apart. So I had to rethink what I was doing. And at that stage then, I was working with a really up-and-coming Irish tech startup company. But in the tech startup world, your money would be a bit less than what would be elsewhere. And that's part of the game. So at that stage, if we were to discuss the possibility of me becoming the stay-at-home dad, at that point, it was purely financial. And we did have that conversation. Right. Yeah, of course we did. And it petrified me. I was like, no, I can't give up work. Are you mad?
And Mel, so you did the figures and Mel was earning more than you.
Oh, yeah.
That's
right. Exactly it, yeah.
Yeah.
So it was,
but you loved what you did and it was part of who you were. And so the conversation happened, but you said...
I pushed back straight away.
Okay.
I was like, there's no way I could do that. And for numerous reasons. One, money. Two, didn't want to the camaraderie that you have with work. And then I guess three... With the benefit of hindsight, I think I was scared. It was fear, because my youngest wasn't even born at that stage. My eldest was about 3 and a bit. And previous to becoming a dad, I never had any experience with young kids at all, ever.
So you weren't an uncle or anything like that?
No, I have one brother and he doesn't have any kids.
Right.
And like a friend's bar one or two when I was in my kind of late 20s, early 30s. I think maybe one or two of them had.
Yeah.
So I never had any experience with it.
Right.
And then the thought of actually being in control of a baby and a four-year-old from start to finish literally petrified me then.
The man thing and bringing home the bacon and being the main breadwinner, did that enter into it at all?
That old nugget, huh? Put my club on my back and walk out the door and bring home the meat. do you know, at the very start, it would have had, in the back of my mind.
Okay.
Of course it did. I'd be lying if I said it didn't. But I read, now this is after a while of being a stay-at-home dad, I read a report that it kind of put a value on what a stay-at-home dad in terms of salary or potential salary. And when I read what it was, I kind of went, that's my value.
Yeah.
You know, because...
But that'd be the same for stay-at-home mums as well.
Oh, exactly, exactly.
And we had that chat with Barbara Scully the other day and it's about time that society woke up to that.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, so people would be interested to know why you were forced into it then. It was health.
It was health, yeah. Yeah, yeah. So at the ripe age of 36, I found out I had multiple signs of heart disease in both sides of the heart at a pretty advanced stage.
Were you symptomatic?
Yes and no.
All right, go on.
No, in the sense that before I ran 2 5Ks in the week before I went in with the pains.
Right.
So that's the no part. The yes part would be that I am, for as long as I can remember, I always had palpitations on and off. And then just before I got to a certain point and I was brought in, because the cholesterol was too high from the doctor, that was what flagged it from the first case. And then had the CT angiogram. And when the doctor told me those words, I'll never forget those words, I think it accelerated.
What did he say to you?
Yeah, so we're kind of sitting the same distance as we are apart at the moment. And he looked up and he just goes, remind me again, Ross, what age you were. And in my head, I thought, this can't be good if he's asking that straight off the cuff. So I said, 36, which I was at the time. And he just looked at me straight, deadpan. He said, you have multiple signs of heart disease in both sides of your heart.
Right.
And I was like, kind of like, you what now? Came as a shock.
And he would have asked you these questions, and excuse me if I sound like a doctor.
No.
Is there a family history?
Yes, doc. There is, actually.
There is, yeah. So
there is a strong family history on my dad's side of the family. So he, dad is still with us, thankfully. He's 73, but he had a triple bypass when he was 46. He's had maybe two or three stents since. He obviously had a major heart attack for the triple bypass, and then he's had a few minor heart attacks, and he's still there. He's still going strong. So, but all his siblings had it. Like, there was bypasses, triple bypasses, more bypasses than the M50, if I'm honest. Like, and some quadruples.
You knew it was coming down the road, so to speak.
Yeah, like, it was definitely in the post. And I suppose when I'm in my 20s, you're fairly headstrong and you're bulletproof in terms of, that's not going to happen to me. And I kind of thought, like, 50s.
Yeah,
I'll be okay, but like not 36.
So you got the diagnosis, and then you're saying that it accelerated the whole thing.
Well,
because of stress, was it? Worry, yeah.
Yeah, I looking back now with fresh eyes, I think it was a kind of psychosomatic that when you actually heard those words, because at that stage I was told, you're coming back in next week for an MRI, which would have been probably standard for someone of my age, because he said, you're not in any immediate danger, but we want to get this looked at.
Yeah.
And I think within those 4 or 5 days, panic would have set in. The mind would have run into a knot, because I was looking at my baby was only 6 months old at that stage, not even actually, because it was a few months before, and my wife and my eldest daughter. And I was thinking, this could be it. Like, I'm not ready to go yet. And I think it actually accelerated things, because what happened then was, the only way I can describe it to you is, imagine you had a balloon in your hand. And you had long nails, and you're constantly doing that. You're constantly squeezing it. That was the pressure that I was feeling around the heart area. And then literally someone got a match inside my chest and lit it up under the heart. And when that happened, I just looked at Mel, who was standing there, and I said, we need to go now. Like, right now, let's go.
And they kept you in and put the stents in.
They kept me in overnight and angiogrammed the first thing next morning. And then the cardiologist, and this is a different cardiologist, so this was in Vincent's, and an amazing cardiologist, but he just said, you've got a bit of work to do there, pal. He said, you're staying here tonight, you'll see me tomorrow, and we'll get you sorted.
Right.
And that was 2016. So 4 went in.
So then you had to reappraise your life. You're 36, and when that happens to you, I would imagine your whole life flashes in front of you, and what your priorities are.
Yeah.
What you want to do with the rest of your life, because you value it more, do you?
Yeah, it's a bit of a cliche, and I know you probably get banded around more on TV and stuff like that, but like, it makes you think, that's for sure. It's probably the best way of putting it. I'm not too sure if I could say my whole life flashed before my eyes.
Okay.
But it definitely made things, you have to have an alternative look at things. So that's what kind of, it took a while now. It wasn't all plain sailing when I first got out. I was back in and out a few times. I thought there was heart attacks happening, and I thought it was heart, but it was actually, it was a panic attack. And I'd never had a panic attack before. And by all accounts, they mimic each other to a certain extent. And I suppose the context of where I had come from, work was done in the heart. It was quite a lot of work done. I was at home. This feeling was going on, and I ended up in and out of hospital maybe 3 or 4 times, and the ambulance, which in front of the kids wasn't nice.
No.
Thankfully, it wasn't a heart attack, and I'm not saying thankfully it was a panic attack, because if anyone's had them, they're horrible. But in the grand scheme of things, they're not a heart attack, from my point of view, at that stage.
Okay, so then yourself and Mel sat down again. Did you, at what stage did you decide, okay, I'll have a go at this, minding the children and giving up work?
Yeah, good question. So I went back to work actually for a small bit, but I was in sales and account management. And in sales, if you're selling, it's obvious. If you're not selling, it's obvious. And because there's no hiding place.
Okay, if you're not selling, 100%,
you're bringing the money. If you're not selling, there's no hiding place. And the lads I worked with were absolutely brilliant, like brilliant. But they didn't want to put pressure on me, and I wanted to go back to try and get myself back into the routine.
Yeah.
But it was too early. I was all consumed about what was going on. So then we went, I stood down from the job, which was a hard decision, but it turned out in hindsight to be the right thing to do. So then at the weekend, we were at the zoo and we're walking around. And at that stage, previous to the stents, I used to bring Mia when she was young, go running with her in the buggy, and I'd have the dog and I'd be pushing the buggy and the dog. Not pushing the dog, obviously. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so we were in the zoo and Elle was only a baba, but Mia got tired. And so we'd swapped. We put Mia into the buggy and she looked huge in it. And she was only not even four. And I was looking at her and the penny dropped. And I was thinking, that stage of me pushing her around, you know, in the buggy is gone already. And I was thinking, that's way too fast. And then I was like, why in God's name would I not do this? Like, if I looked back at the age I am now and look back and if I didn't take the opportunity when I had the chance to do it, I would have been really annoyed at me because it goes by so fast, number one. And it's just been brilliant.
Uh-huh.
You know, there's been lots of downs, of course. I mean, kids are kids, they're going to push your buttons. But yeah.
Listening to you there, and I'm thinking to myself, there are people at home going, well, why don't you have a woman on and talk to her about? And I suppose the facts are, and we outlined them at the beginning, is that you are in the minority by a good stretch. So you are still a bit of an oddity because you're in the minority, and that's why we're chatting to you today. And of course, you have the story of your heart as well.
It is changing though, which is good.
Yeah,
it is changing. Like, there's I don't know. Sorry if I cut in. You're going to
go ahead.
Like, I can see any dad I know wants to be a hands-on dad. There's no dads from my generation and a bit older. There's not one person who I know who has kids has said, oh, I'm going to stay away and let the kids go to bed. They want to be involved because the bottom line is we're parents too.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the way I see it. And that there are other people who have different opinions on that, which is fair enough. But
what do you get back out of it? It's not as if you're...
You know what you get? You get grey hair, no hair.
No, you don't. You get so much out of it. And that's why I feel sorry for, like, men of my dad's generation.
Yeah.
You know, and I've said it before and I'll say it again, nothing was expected of them and they delivered. And they missed out big time.
They missed out. And
by not being hands-on.
It was just the way it was done back then. Yeah. And like, that's just, you can't blame anybody for having that mindset when they're older generation, because that's all they knew. But I'm delighted to see, like, even in the school where the girls are, the pickups, there's so many dads doing it, collections. And it's not just because mum's not there. You know, mum's gone away or mum's sick.
It's because dads want it.
It's because dads want it.
Isn't that brilliant?
And that is the difference. And it's brilliant to see.
Yeah.
And when I started doing this, I didn't set out to champion this type of message, but it was kind of a buck the trend and it did raise a few eyebrows. But to be fair, from 95% of the people, they were just like, this is brilliant.
And what about you inside your head then? You know, about the fact that Mel is the one who's the breadwinner now.
Yeah, she is. Do you know what? Mel, my wife, is an amazing high achiever. She's brilliant at work. She's brilliant at the job that she does and the role she performs. I think even if I was at the highest level of that, like, that's the level I wouldn't get to. And I'm actually quite comfortable with it because she is an amazing person and I'm quite lucky to have.
And what about understanding the role of women then over the years? You have a greater appreciation of that now.
Yeah, there's a lot of kind of things that, you know, they don't get credit for. Stay-at-home parents is what I meant.
But it was they were predominantly women.
Still
it is predominantly women, yeah.
I was just talking to somebody earlier on and I was just thinking, so like back then, you know, if you were a woman and you had a career of sorts and then you had babies, your career was gone. It was just, that was it. That's just the way it was. It was done. Imagine how many amazing female brains are just cooked up inside four walls. I only had this conversation earlier on.
Yeah, you see, it's a difficult one though, Ross, because what stay-at-home parents do is hugely important.
It's hugely important.
Not just for their immediate family, but for society.
Yep. Yeah, I agree.
So, you can't say those brains were wasted because they weren't in a way, you know.
I wasn't getting on the door wasted.
But it's a difficult conversation.
It is. It has been and probably will be for a long time.
Yeah. But I think by reading about you and you chatting here today, it opens up the conversation for people.
Yeah.
There may be somebody listening today.
And I hope so.
And they might go home this evening and go, I was into your man on the radio today.
Yeah.
And I was thinking that maybe that's something I might want to do. What do you think, Jane or whoever?
With having 6 years experience under my belt now, right, with being a stay-at-home dad, Jesus, yeah.
Yeah.
Can I say Jesus?
Well, you said it. You said it's too late.
Yes, absolutely.
And you've have sort of a plan now to do something for dads.
I'm hoping to, yeah.
Go on.
So having been I'm calling it the Good Dad Academy. And what I hope to do is to actually help dads be more present with their family so that they can enjoy that time that they have to the absolute maximum. And I mentioned on or touched on it earlier on because time goes by so fast. Like, I mean, me has gone 10, as I said. And I'm thinking, how in God's name did that happen? And then at the same time, from the last 6 years, the nuggets I've gotten from being a stay-at-home parent, what I've seen, what I've gone through, both, you know, emotionally, mentally, physically, I've learnt off the kids, they've learnt off me, hopefully, at some point. But throughout those 6 years, and being the dad, I've gone to so many parent and toddler groups. And I think
so. You want to share this with other men? Is that?
Well, I think so. Yeah, because there's so little out there for dads, by dads, or even it doesn't have to even be by dads. But like, there was so many groups out there, and I was the only dad in that group. Now, that didn't bother me in the slightest. If I'm honest, it was just a learning curve. I was a parent, and I wanted to be there, and I learned off the mums usually. But a lot of dads wouldn't do it, or don't do it, or whatever the reason is, they're not there.
Yeah.
And you know, maybe traditionally they're still out there doing the work, the 9 to 5. But I'd like to have events and activities that dads can actually get involved with to help grow their bond with their children.
Okay.
And
Maybe when you bring it to the next level, you might come back in and talk to us about it.
I would absolutely love to. Yeah, right. I would absolutely love to, Ray.
Yeah, for the moment, Ross Good, thanks so much for coming in. Mind yourself, Ross.
Cheers, Ray. Thank you.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.